Hi, and welcome to A Place in Time, the official podcast of the North Canton Heritage Society. I'm your host, Kevin Woodside, and today we've got a great interview with Dr. Richard Wersler. Dr. Wersler invited us into his home a few months ago, and we had a great opportunity to talk about his life, his travels, the World War II veteran, and he was a optometrist here in North Canton. He's actually a lifelong resident of North Canton. Now, I also want to add in, I have a bit of a personal investment in this guy because I grew up on and currently live on Wersler Avenue. So it was really cool for me to kind of get the story of why it's called Wersler Avenue, because I'm not going to lie, for 37 years I've been trying to figure that out. Before we get into the interview itself and hear some of his awesome stories, I do want to just give everyone a heads up. We ran into some problems with the recording of this episode, mainly just some speaker issues and some microphone issues. So you're going to hear some clumping and some thumping and some other stuff. So should be fine. I've done my best to clean it up. Now, that being said, I do want to also reiterate that I am new to this podcast world. So if anyone has any suggestions or any feedback in general, feel free to send it our way. You can find us at any of the usual social media haunts, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can also send us an email. You can visit the website. The podcast actually has an official email address now. It's nchs.pod@gmail.com. One other thing before we jump into this. We're currently getting ready for a really awesome episode that I'm super excited for. We are going to do an episode celebrating the 100th anniversary of the community Christmas tree. Now, I went on to some of the various North Canton-related Facebook pages and requested some stories that you might have about the Christmas tree lighting. I still want them. I got a couple good ones. I want more. If you want to record one and send it my way, you can send it to nchs.pod@gmail.com. If you want me to come over and record it, I will. You know, I really want to be able to capture the spirit of the past century with this great and fun family holiday Christmas tradition. So far, I've gotten some really good little anecdotes. I want more. I'm hungry for them. So go to your grandpa. Go to your great-grandma. Go to your mom, your dad, your aunt, your uncle. Go to your nephew. It's okay if it was a year ago. It's okay if it's 80 years ago. Did you have your first kiss underneath that tree? Were you the guy who lit it up back in 1985? You know, the guy who plugged it in. Did you sing in the choir? Did you play in the band? Did you listen to the band in the choir? Did you see Santa Claus? I got a story about Santa Claus coming down in a helicopter. That's pretty sweet. I did not know that happened. That's the sort of material I'm really interested in. Give me as much as you can, please, North Cantonites, please. Let's really make this into a super special episode. If for whatever reason you don't want your real name on it, I'll take an anonymous one. Just send that to the email. You can reply on any of the various social media posts. I'm going to be kind of reposting those again. I think the deadline I have for this is November 26th. And I'm hoping to get the episode up in time for the actual lighting ceremony, so that you can listen to this while you're on your way to the lighting ceremony, or while you're on your way home, or as it's being lit up. All right, so we're going to go ahead and jump into this interview with Dr. Richard Wersler. Hope you enjoy. Oh, sorry, one more thing. We do actually, this is not the full and complete interview with Dr. Wersler. We have, like, tons more stories from him. We're going to be doing a secondary episode, a follow-up with him, sometime in January. So stay tuned for that, and we'll see you guys at the end of the episode.
Well, I was born in 1925, on Worcester Avenue, where I lived until I serviced later. My dad, a factory worker, and we had three other children, and my mother early on developed a very serious rheumatic arthritis, and so that meant that we children had to do a lot of homemaking, but things kind of changed then because my dad was only working 2 days a week, and so he plowed a huge garden, and the three older kids would be out there with their hoe every morning, and believe me, you had better not hoe out a tomato plant. We planted hundreds of vegetables, it seemed like, and back in those days, we did what they call cold packing. Dad built shelves all around the basement, and we bought hundreds of canning jars. So I sliced tomatoes and peeled beans and all that kind of stuff a great amount in my early life there. And so after the Depression, we were approaching World War II time, and I remember at school, everybody was excited about the war, and the young people wanted to go and do their part. And we had a scholarship test that combined with the military, and you could indicate on it whether you wanted to go to the Army or you wanted to go to the Navy. And so I had been watching the movies of all the submarine attacks in Northern Atlantic, and I said, I would rather be able to crawl away from my wound than I would to drown in the middle of the ocean. Yeah. So I put down Army. The test was because they had an engineering program. Mm. And so if you rated high enough, you were to train for an engineer. So I went, and I was in the McGill Army Specialized Training Program for one quarter down in Cincinnati. So that was the beginning of my education. I was going to be a mathematics teacher. In the war then, I was in this armored division, a group of 12 and a half track vehicle, and we did a lot of all kinds of preparation physical ed, making you stronger, and also giving you the right mental attitude to be able to go and do what you had to. And then we would have these field exercises, and you'd be out in the field in the big Tennessee, and the sounds and the sight of tanks and armored artillery and half tracks all over, and jeeps flying here and there. It had the aura that was so impressive that you just felt so tiny in all that big movement, you know. So you were almost, in effect, it was building up your excitement to go to war. And so in October, by the way, in that preparation, my bunkmate was a young man from New Jersey, and he came from a wealthy family. He told me that his dad could get him out of the Army anytime he wanted, but he was right in there with the rest of us, and so he had been a friend through the whole life.
That's good.
Built a bond there that you just can't believe, even with his wife. Now, at the war, we arrived over in Europe in October of 44, and we landed and looked clear across in a convoy. We had no idea where we were going, but when we saw the Rock of Gibraltar, we all knew we were going to southern France. So southern France had already been invaded at Marseille, and pushed the enemy back a ways. But what was happening was that the war in Italy was forcing them to come in across the Alps and across the borders and so forth. So here we were, tankers, and we drove to the Maritime Alps on the French-Italian border, and they gave us 29 mules. And so we took our 10 and 1 rations and walked up the mountains to have a new line of defense. And so we did that for a whole month, and it was super Boy Scouting up there. I'd been a Boy Scout from the time I was 12, I guess, and enjoyed it. Then we came back, and we got on a train. Not when you were taking you north, they had to get off the track and allow the medical trains to come back down and so forth. So it took about 5 days to go 870 miles. But we got up near Strasbourg, France, and then we did in early November, early December, I'll say, we were at the actual battlefront in Alsace-Lorraine. And I didn't know it then, but actually the Wurster family is a large family throughout the whole United States, but they're all traceable back to one man who was born in Alsace.
Really?
Yes. And I didn't learn that until later, but we then got at the front, and we were General Patch, and he was assigned that he was going to be the first one to cross the Rhine. However, the offensive at Bastogne, he had to send one of his two armored divisions north to rescue them, open that up, and so that spread us out over two division front. And it was snow and cold, almost a record of winter there. But after the holiday, while we were in a small German village, we slept in the barns of the people there. And this Alsatian family called us in for a great big berry pie for Christmas. I've always remembered that. I've told my family several times. I'm sure they're tired of hearing of it by now. But then, after Bastogne, this secondary battle that I speak of at Hattin, and then once we crossed the Rhine, it was transferred to General Patton, and it was all pushed, and we would actually go 25 miles in a day at times, on half tracks of tanks, mind you.
Yeah.
But then the war was all settled on May 5, 1945. And so it took a good while to get home. I got home in August. But the way the Army is, I had to go to California,
of course,
because that had been scheduled.
Wow.
So when it came Christmas time, the only way I could get home, trains wouldn't take any more reservations. I got a bus reservation to Chicago. It took 72 hours. So, got home there, and then another train from Chicago home. That was no problem. So, I went to work at Hoover's for a little while, even though I was still on leave from the Army.
But was there a lot of guys that were in that similar situation?
Yes. And then I began up in camp. And the GI Bill became available. And so my aunt had worked as an office girl at an optometrist in North Canton, and she suggested I go talk with him about an alternative to being a math teacher. And I did, and he was very persuasive about his concepts. And so I applied to three optometry schools, and he suggested I go to the one in Chicago that was the kind of concepts that he believed in, and so that was the beginning of that. And while I was in Chicago, optometry school, I lived in a little single room in an apartment, and this girl came walking past my front steps there every day. So I began to go out there and kind of watch for her to be going by. And here she worked at a Swift meat company at that time, but she lived in a club called Elmore Club. So then one day I saw this sign. The Elmore Club was, the optometry school at that time was all men. And so they posted a dance. So I went and I met her then. And so the rest is history, as I tell my kids. You know. So came back to Northampton, passed the board, and started practice in 1949 in Northampton. And I was called back in the service for the Korean War. So
really?
I was in that then 18 months. And I didn't have to go over. I was sent down to Fort Meade, Maryland, and there was a reception center for new people, so everybody had to have two pairs of glasses if they wore glasses. So I was an optometrist in Fort Meade for 18 months. So when I came home, I started practice again in North Canton. And then I bought a building and remodeling it through the years, and I practiced 40 years.
Where was the building?
South Main Street.
Okay.
It was a vacant lot. It became a vacant lot to my north there. But anyhow, it was 822 South. And my practice was successful from the beginning. I think my grandfather and my father were well known in the community. So I think that helped kind of a base. There were two other optometrists who would come in the evening and have office hours, and they both stopped their practices and turned it down to me for a while. And so that was an easy way to get started. So I enjoyed it, and I did follow the concepts of that former optometrist I spoke about, and I developed kind of a child-oriented practice.
Oh, that's awesome.
Actually, I was getting more or less 40% children, and so that was enjoyable to me. Through the years, when I was 28, superintendent of schools in North Canton, where I'd gone, came to me and suggested that I apply for run for school board, because he said that the buildings overcrowded and everything, and so he suggested then that I look around my acquaintances and suggest talk somebody else into doing it as well. So three of us ran for school board there in that year. That was about 1954, I'd say. And we all won. And so the first thing we had to do was hire a new superintendent, and we had to start hiring architects. And there was so much work that we actually were night after night there till midnight or later. It was very strenuous, but the public was ready for it at that time.
Yeah.
So they were very supportive. And I guess I kind of like to talk from they kind of encouraged me to go around to these PTA meetings and get the word out, you know. And so I bought a recorder, and I would make my little presentation at home, and my wife thought it was okay, so I went ahead. So I learned that, and I used that concept for the speeches I made afterwards, I think.
Oh, that's great.
I liked it. Yeah. Well, let's see. Where are we? My son went to optometry school and joined me in 1980. And so I worked with him together for a while. But I had more freedoms to travel, so we went back to Europe. We went back to that last town where we had such a battle. And the town had been flattened, and it was reconstructed, and it was right next to a French Maginot Line bunker. And here sat a Sherman tank in recognition of the 14th Armored Division.
Wow, that's awesome.
So that was kind of a thrill to see. And we knew by that time that the founder of the Forstner family had come from Palisades.
Yeah.
So we visited the church where he was married in 1752, something like that. And I've been closely involved in keeping track and keeping my kids. And even the Heritage has a book that has our lineage.
Mm-hmm.
And all the verses in the United States can be going back to him.
That's amazing.
And they have acquired 21 spellings of the name over that period of time. So that's a bit of history for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So let me tell you, I live on Wurstler Avenue.
You do?
I do.
What number? You're up the hill.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, my father, I'll allude to it here. Mm-hmm. My grandfather. Do you want the whole story of Wurstler Avenue on this or not?
That would be amazing. I really want to hear it.
My grandfather, as I rode up to her here, was on a farm on 619,
mm-hmm.
just east of Uniontown.
Yeah.
And he married a school teacher wife, and they moved down to New Berlin, it was called then.
Yeah.
And in New Berlin, he went to the east side and started the creek.
Okay.
However, the natives, and it had, when you have cream in, you're processing milk, you have to do it 7 days a week. And so the population there, the villagers, if you will, felt they were quite concerned that he was open on the Sabbath. So after he took this for a while, he went back to farming. He went on 40th Street and he bought a 10-acre farm. And the house was about 920 or something like that. And then it'd be an odd number there.
Yeah.
921, say. He ran this berry farm, which was already planted about the north half of the farm. And he had a shack there where the people would bring the berries in, and when I was a kid, then that shack was still there, and the ramshackle at that time. But we knew what it was all about because the berries had become not tame anymore, but half wild, if you will.
Yeah.
So the whole neighborhood would come back there and pick our berries, and there were cherry trees on around the margin. Mm-hmm. And of course, as kids, we would get on those and see how far we could swing down with them, you know, because they're very limber.
Yeah. Still have cherry trees in my backyard.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Well, I'll have to back up.
Mm-hmm.
If you want the whole story on the Wurstler Street, a few years with the berry farm,
mm-hmm.
he decided he would make a little development of a few homes
mm-hmm.
on Portage. So, here his home was right in the middle of the tract where he wanted to start. So he had the house moved to where there were some plum and cherry and apple trees.
Mm-hmm.
And he left a huge pine in the front yard because that was off a bit to the side.
Yeah.
So he made a road big enough for four. And there was a man who wanted a greenhouse, so he took over a lot of the area on the east side, and then my grandfather built three houses on the west side. And so that's how it stood for a while. And then in 1920, he ended up getting a disease and passed away. But that's about the time that my father was old enough to get married, and he had a cousin in Akron who was a builder, so he built our house at 433.
Wurstler.
Okay. After my grandfather died in 1920, then my father proceeded to build four or five more homes. And we had a huge play area, though, because when they extended the road that far, they extended even up kind of a slope planted the orchard where he thought maybe he'd move up in the 400 or so block, and he planted fruit trees in the backyard. But my grandfather, on my mother's side, had been a superintendent of schools in North Canton until 1926. And he didn't support the idea, though, that such concentration on sports. So he retired, and he became a realtor. So he talked my dad into buying a big portion of west of 6th and 7th over as far as the back of that faith church.
Yeah.
And so I won't speak about the development of those, all because on the Worcester Avenue part, when the Depression came, he had homes underway, and of course it was a job trying to rent those. But then after the war, the economy picked up again. Mm-hmm. He resumed building, and he built the homes all the way back to 7th Street. And then he decided that he would retire from a Hoover job and be a full-time builder, and with my grandfather then develop areas. But 2 weeks after he retired, he passed away. So that's the end of the story in 1956, as far as the Worcester Avenue is concerned.
And is that when they went north to kind of up towards Woodrow at that point?
From then on, it went on up on 7th.
Yeah.
My dad did build 701 and the next one, too. And even across the street from that, he built one or two. But then he built the 701 Pierce for my sister. Her husband had been a pilot in the war, mm-hmm. and then he came home and got a job at Hoover's in their engineering program, but he applied to go back in. So they had just moved into this house that my dad built, mm-hmm. and so he went. So when I was discharged from the Korean War, we bought it from We have two wonderful kids. My son, the optometrist, and my daughter was a teacher at Greentown, a physical ed teacher, so she knows everybody. Everybody knows her.
Yeah.
And they've been very supportive through my wife's illness here and my getting ready to move and all. They've kind of taken charge. I still have things to do.
Okay, I want to thank Dr. Wurstler once again for allowing us to come to his home. Like I said, I've got more material for everybody, so hopefully, probably sometime in January, we'll get that episode up to you. In the meantime, next we're going to go talk to Doug. So we're going to find out what's going on with him and some of these different projects he's involved in. After that, we're going to do the Christmas tree lighting. Like I said in the beginning of the episode, if you have some stories, please share them. That's all for today. Again, thanks to Dr. Wurstler, and I want to especially thank him for his patience. It did take a while to get this episode out. Thank you again, Dr. Wurstler. We'll see you again next month. There will be times a little bit here where you might hear some static or a little bit of clomping. Okay. Or while you're on your way home, or as it's being lit up. Because Litton is not a word.